You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. We know that many islands in the Pacific Ocean formed from volcanic activity, but we haven't gotten to watch the process happen very often. After all, it doesn't happen every day. But in 2015, it did. A volcanic eruption created a new landmass that connected two existing islands in Tonga, Hunga Tonga and Hunga Haape. And the fact that the new island is still around 4 years later is also pretty rare. It's only the third new island in 150 years to last more than a few months. Scientists at NASA think the new island could shed light on early volcanic activity on Mars, and rather than studying it with remote imaging and rovers, they've teamed up with Sea Education Association to sail there, literally, and study it in person. Jim Garvin is chief scientist of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, and Carrie Whitaker is assistant professor of oceanography at Sea Education Association, and they join me both in the studio. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
All right, I've seen photos of this new island, and it actually looks Photoshop. It looked fake because there are these two beautiful, green, lush, tropical islands, and then there's this stretch of black lava and the top of a volcano kind of sticking out of it. I mean, what's it like to actually be there?
Well, this is the kind of place that we always dream of because it's about as primeval as you can get. You know, explosion of liquid rock with water producing cone-like landscapes with craters. It's literally Mars on Earth. And when you get one that goes through those processes in front of your eyes, our eyes as people, our eyes from satellites, we get a chance to sort of play the tape backwards. We haven't seen them happen through the eyes of 21st century technology and experience. So this is very otherworldly and spectacular to see. And it really does evoke the magic of what we think is happening on other planets like Mars, planets that had a watery past that now look different. So we go to Earth to explore Mars.
I mean, that's pretty neat in and of itself. Let's take a step back and talk about what we know about how this island actually formed. I mean, volcanic eruption, right? But some of the details, how did this actually come about?
So sometime in probably the middle of 2014, liquid rock 100 meters under the ocean erupted through a crack. And with the water pressure of 100 meters of water, it probably oozed out as what we call pillow lavas. And over a period of the next 6 months, it built a table up from the seafloor in the Pacific within a bigger volcano, the Hunga Caldera, to form a plateau on which the lava, the liquid rock, was close enough to the air through the water to explode. When water hits 3,000-degree rock, it's not going to be too happy. It will blow up into fragmental debris. And that produced the growth of this ash volcano. And typically, those ash volcanoes form and they wash away. But this one had enough stuff, enough special conditions to last longer than anticipated and to give us that record of how these things grow up. So it's going through its life stages as we visit, as we watch, as we learn. And that's a rare commodity.
And how frequently does something like this actually happen?
So in the last 100 years, scientists on Earth, of course, where we are, have witnessed two. One in Capelinhos in the Azores Islands of the Central Atlantic, part of Portugal. In 1957-58, Capelinhos erupted. Lots of attention right in the International Geophysical Year. And then in 1963, and then for the next couple years, Surtsey, the god of fires volcano, erupted off the coast of Iceland. Both of them have survived for decades, and we use them as kind of record books. But they were witnessed through the technology of the 50s and 60s. And since then, we've gotten better. We can study them remotely. We can visit them through sailing ships with students. We have new techniques. And so now we can watch one from its earliest stages, from space, from ship, from foot, from laboratory gear that can see things at a billionth of a meter scale. We have the whole shebang now applied to this special place in Tonga, which is like a gift from Mother Nature.
I want to talk about this idea of actually sailing there, right? Because we think, as you're saying, all of this new technology and the sensors and the satellites and all of the detail of measurement that we can get to. And then we're talking about going to this island on 135-foot sailing ship? I mean, why sail there as opposed to taking some other big modern research vessel there?
We can get closer. And Sea Education Association has sailed to very remote places in the world for almost 50 years. There's so many exciting elements of this collaboration. First, that there aren't charts for this new island.
Carrie Whitaker, as a person sailing on that ship, that's actually got to be a little bit scary, right? I mean, you're literally going into uncharted waters.
It's scary. It's romantic. You know, my background's in oceanography. I've been on large research vessels. Sailing and doing oceanography it really combines all of the elements of navigation, of the physics of the wind, of movement. There's so much history and culture in terms of navigation in Polynesia, where we'll be sailing. So, yeah, really this mission combines all of those elements and involves students in it from charting the waters, charting this new place, to actually setting foot on the island and collecting data that will inform these large questions about how islands evolve over time and erode. So
give us a sense of what this mission actually will be. I mean, the islands, it's been about 4 years, 3.5 years since the island formed. What's the goal at this point? 5 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was 2015 that it appeared.
So the island appeared and it stopped its eruptive phase in late January of 15. And we got the first high-resolution satellite images and the first people ever touched foot on the island in about March, when it was still hot and pretty unstable. The first visits by scientists were by a big team of scientists was by the Sea Education Association last year in a pilot study to bring students, some of our NASA scientists and satellite data all together to see what we could do, sort of simulating how we might send people to Mars. So it's a window into the workings of the Earth that we can apply forward in the oceans and to Mars.
Okay, so explore that, Jim Garvin, a little bit more, this and Mars part, because obviously this is cool. It's a new island on Earth. It tells us how volcanoes and volcanic islands form on our planet. What does that have to do with Mars?
So Mars may not look like it, but Mars is a water planet. Its water stories are hidden in the rocks that we've been crawling over with robots. We'll have students act like our robots much better with the mission coming up next month. But Mars' water story is a complicated one because Mars has things that are fundamentally not like Earth. Tremendous climate change due to its rotational axis variations, a smaller world, less internal heat. Lots of factors that give us, it's a magical control experiment by Mother Nature. We think Mars had standing, persistent bodies of water into which volcanoes erupted, like this one in Tonga. However, the water's gone. It's either frozen out, oxidized rocks, or evaporated away into the current climate state. So we see these landforms, hundreds of them, thousands of them in some cases, in a state of arrested development. Something happened, they formed, it's gone. The record books are gone. It's like archaeology of other planetary landscapes. So we need to see how the records might have worked when Mars had water, water erosion, eruptions into water, even microbial systems, if it had those, that might have worked in the presence of water. So this little volcano is going to be a training site for us to say, ooh, those things on Mars that kind of look like that, that we see with satellites, that we're not visiting with women and men, students like SEA student crew. What can we learn by seeing what a real one did on Earth, where there's waves and rain and wind and erosion and gravitational collapse, all those things mixed together? It's kind of a perfect story. And if we can read the records back on Mars, we can say more about how much water, how long it lasted, and that has implications for the biological potential and the possible records of said potential in the rocks on Mars, which is a big goal for understanding.
I mean, so you can kind of look at this and see, okay, this is what it looks like when this happens. Oh, look, I see that here, here, and here on Mars. So that must have happened there. But okay, that one looks different. Something else
exactly
happened there.
And we're doing it all now, thanks to the students from SEA, thanks to new satellite techniques, in 3D. So we're seeing the shape of things at scales from inches to meters to decameters on this island in ways that in the 50s and 60s were virtually impossible. I mean, you'd have to have teams of surveyors crawling over dangerous volcanoes. Now we use drones and satellites and students when we can.
So, Carrie Whitaker, mm-hmm. What is it that the students and Sea Education Association, with the pilot study last year and again coming up with this new mission, have actually done? What does that give us that our amazing detailed three-dimensional imagery doesn't give us?
Sure. So we've got the sailing vessel. We also have a small boat that will be able to deploy a side-scan sonar and map the caldera, so near shore of the island that a larger vessel couldn't do. So we'll be doing some surveys there. We'll be setting foot on the island and putting out some GPS markers that then we can use some drone surveys and ground those flights in GPS marking.
Okay, so just, yeah, literally a way to say, okay, that's where we are.
Yeah, yep. And then align that with the satellite data as well. There is a crater lake on the island. We also have a plan to get some bathymetry mapping, so mapping of what that crater lake looks like under the surface of the water. And to do that, we'll be deploying two pack rafts that are combined as kind of a catamaran and deploying the side scan sonar to map the bottom. And that's something that we'll be doing with students. Vegetation surveys are another thing that we can do on foot to really get that ground truthing data. Bird surveys. Another remarkable element of the island that was discovered last year is all of the debris, marine debris that's been washed up. So we'll be cataloging that as well, measuring it, and then taking it off the island as much as we can.
That presumably is something that we're not going to find on Mars.
Well, you know, do we know that, Heather? But I think the other dimension of the students is they are the super intelligent, informed explorers that will be the first wave of how we start to think about how those kind of explorations happen when we do send women and men to Mars.
We've already mentioned that the island is eroding somewhat, which I have to say, my first reaction to that was, wait, you think you've just put all of this new rock and created this new land. It's already going away. I mean, do we have a sense it has lasted 5 years? That's longer than most new volcanic islands apparently managed to survive. Do we have a sense of how long it will be with us?
Well, that's one of the big questions. Why has it survived? We think this island is supported by a large plateau of lava under the undersea part of the island that produces kind of like a shelf on top of which this cone sits. And that's given it the longevity of almost 5 years relative to what was anticipated by the experts. We all thought 3 months to 6 months, gone, that's cool. Now we're coming into 5 years, and our work that we published last year as very preliminary suggests maybe 30 to 100 years as an island system. And that's a great natural laboratory. That's long enough to see cycles of climate, decadal ones, interannual ones, see how ecological colonization affects those things. Sea level rise integrated over 30 to 100 years is an issue. This is a time-lapse view of new land in an Earth system that's changing. And that's a great opportunity. And the students get to be part of it at the ground floor. They will see things that won't be there next year. Or the year after that.
Jim Garvin is chief scientist of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, and Carrie Whitaker is assistant professor of oceanography at Sea Education Association. And together, they are working on exploring Hunga Tonga Hunga Ha'ape, the newest island on Earth, formed about 5 years ago. Thank you so much, both of you, for coming in.
Thank you, Heather.
Thanks, Heather. Let's go.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.